Accession number 18493, reel 17.
Mr. Lupton, reel 17. You were in Mandalay, still with your wounded ear. What happened to you after that?
Well, we had 2 or 3 days in Mandalay, resting up in what used to be the, I don't know whether it was the king or prince or whatever it was, his palace in Mandalay. And then we were taken on a train, which was the only form of road, or the only form of overland communication which was possible at the time, because in the middle of Mandalay there was complete devastation at that time. They took us on a train which was just bare engine and some trucks up to a place called Maimio, which was further north, and then we stayed in well, it wasn't a barracks, it was just a few tents for, I can't remember how many days, a few days anyway. And then they moved several of us, not all, out to a place called Shwebo, which was again north or maybe northwest of Maimio. And we stayed in the camp there for 2, maybe 3 nights, until they flew in an old Dakota DC-3 aircraft for passengers with, I think it was an American pilot at that time. And it took on board several of us, you know, a plane load. It was quite a plane load too, and Gurkhas on stretchers and all kinds of people in it, and flew us out to Dum Dum Airport at Calcutta. As they were landing at Dum Dum, I think he misjudged the runway and found he was flying straight at a bunch of palm trees at the end of the runway, and so had to do a quick zim up in the air, and he just brushed the treetops as he went up. You could hear it going underneath. Anyway, he did another turn around and came and landed all right. And there we were in Dum Dum. Still looks as beautiful an airport now, I think, as it was then, which was pretty awful. And from there we got moved off by train from Calcutta to Pune, where they took us to a hospital and treated us there for 2-3 weeks, I can't remember which. At that time it took a little while for these things to take action on your body, whatever it was. And it was mainly M&B, plus a daily cleaning out, which was horrible. And they didn't stop the M&B until they found I was getting a swelling behind the ear, and they were frightened of meningitis taking over. So they stopped it then, and eventually this went down, and myself and another bloke who had been wounded from our unit in Burma were then moved out and taken by train again halfway back to the east side to a delightful place called Dulali, which is very famous in army records, if not in any others. And that was a rest camp, so-called. Not too bad. And that was the first time we got pay since, I think, since we'd left Egypt. So I had quite a few shillings to spend and enjoy ourselves. And a couple of times we went out down, from Dulali. They've then moved us a few days later, maybe a week later, to Calcutta, where we were stationed or parked or whatever you like in the race course at Calcutta, sleeping on the benches on the stands and feeding in the main mess centre. And whilst we were there, we went out a couple of times down to Calcutta City in the evenings for an evening out. And on the second occasion we went down there, we bumped into one of our people from the second tanks who had marched out with the rest of the unit from Burma and who said that the unit, as what was left of it, were then stationed at Ranchi, which is further north towards Assam, or maybe just in the borders of Assam. But he said that the next day, after we'd seen him, they were going to move down in the direction of Bombay. So what we did, three of us from our unit who were in this place at Calcutta race course, was we went back, packed our kit bags and took Gary down to Calcutta main station to get a train, or try to get a train to Bombay. Well, we had no tickets, of course, or anything like that, but somebody had collected for some reason a few sheets of army form blank, otherwise known as toilet paper, and we had coolies to carry our kit bags whilst we marched through waving this army form blank to the ticket collector. Sir, please go on. Yes, so quite okay. And then we got on board the train. But thinking not to make ourselves too noticeable to anybody coming round checking tickets, we sat in a third class compartment, which was with boarded seats and full of Indians, whose common language was English, because they came from all over the place in India. So we were able to chat with them as we chugged along in the train. And then we got, I think it was about Nagpur, we got out to go and get a cup of tea each. And the guard, or ticket collector, or whatever he was, saw us going back into this third class compartment. Oh, sir, you can't go in there. He said, well, our baggage is in there. Oh, well, come here, I'll find you seats. So he took us and parked us in a second class compartment, which we had all to ourselves. Nobody else to worry us or anything, and we just chugged along happily in the direction of Bombay. And then at one place where there was a siding, we passed a train parked in the siding which had people with black berets on, which were, of course, tank people. And so we said, well, those must be our people there. So we, next station we stopped at, we got out and waited for them. Their train came in and it was the second tanks on their way. So we were returned and greeted very favourably by everybody on board. Then later, when we got to our destination, which was at a place called Dhond, D-H-O-N-D, near Pune, where we were going to re-equip and so on, then our CO got a letter from the CO of the camp at Calcutta Racecourse saying that three people from the second tanks had gone missing, and if he heard about us or saw us, would he please report to him? So Our CO was happy to reply to him and say that he was very glad to see his men back and he wouldn't be taking any action about it. So everything turned out happily. We were in this place, this camp. It had brick huts and so on at Dond. They hadn't been up very long, but they were brick and with the usual sort of, not palm leaf, but vegetation anyway on the roof. And we stayed there for it was a few weeks anyway, whilst we were getting re-equipped and also getting more men out from England to make up our numbers, which had sadly diminished, not totally because of killing or injuries in Burma, but also because of things like dysentery and malaria and these kind of things. And so we got a big intake at that time. We were also used as local armed police because there were a lot of riots going on in districts around about in Pune and other places, and we had to go out and chase them away and deal with them generally peacefully in a way, but not too peacefully. And so, as I say, we were there for some few weeks whilst we got re-equipped with some more modern tanks and vehicles generally, because everything had to be left in Burma at the side of the river before they marched out. So,
can we just quickly go back over part of your route? When you were in Mandalay, you said it had been very, very badly, very badly damaged.
Yes.
This was obviously Japanese air raids, but I mean, did you experience any of those?
No, not because we were on the edge of the city, more or less. I think there was some still continued, but they'd already done so much damage they probably didn't bother anymore. They'd damage all the tram lines and overhead tram cables and this kind of thing, so there was very little transport except any buses which may still be around, and there weren't many of them, and just a few garries and rickshaws. So I don't think they bothered, not at that time anyway, to continue damaging Mandalay.
Was there much of an army presence in Mandalay?
Not at that time, no. No. In fact, most of it was really busy keeping the Japanese at bay just a bit further south still.
Yes, I was thinking rear echelon people, you know, command groups or hospitals and...
Well, we didn't really see any of those either, apart from where we were in this palace, and which was a very robust, strongly built timber palace. And...
It sounds very grand, a palace, is it?
Well, it would have been, yes. It had been somewhat damaged, too, in the bombing, I think. And I could say we were comfortable, at least, but I do remember that I had a position to sleep, which was on a blanket, I think, in a corner in the palace, which I thought would be a good place to be for some reason, and put my mosquito net over me, but unfortunately I put my feet too near the mosquito net, and when I woke up in the morning, they were about three times the size they should have been, with mosquito bites through the net. But we weren't there very long, only a couple of days maybe. There were just people who were on the, say, medical way out, if they could be got out anyway, with a few assistants of, you know, nurses, but men, male nurses and so on, looking after us. The odd doctor there too.
Royal Army Medical Corps, was it?
Yes.
And from there you went by train
up to to Maimeo.
Is this a special hospital train or just?
It's just a few wagons which they'd raked up from somewhere. Possibly the only ones that were lying still in Mandalay or outside, which hadn't been damaged in the air raids.
And then on to Shwebo, where you were taken out.
Shwebo, yes.
Was this a regular run, do you know, this picking up? Or
it must have been at about that time. They couldn't have done it. Well, they may have done it earlier on through that way. They must have done, because there was a bit of a sort of proper landing field at Shwebo, which could take Dakotas and similar smallish aircraft. But whether it was a regular way out, I don't know. It seemed to be, from the way it was organised.
So, in other words, that they had facilities to receive incoming people and process them through to the aircraft.
Yes, yes. At Shwebo, we were only just parked, well, not under tents, because you didn't need to bother with them at that particular time. The monsoon was just coming up behind us somewhere, and it hadn't reached there yet. So we were still sleeping more or less in the open.
And then Shwebo on to Calcutta.
Yes. That was, I suppose it would have been a very interesting flight, if anybody had been interested in looking out to see what was on. But flying over the mountains and so on to get there, and over the forest, of course. But there really wasn't room to move around much on the plane, so you couldn't get up and gawp.
Did you even feel like it?
Didn't really feel like it, no.
And I was just wondering how you were actually feeling in yourself with a badly infected ear still.
Well, I wasn't feeling too good, but it didn't, I don't know, I got used to it by then, I think. 2 or 3 weeks or more on the way, and having them treating it every day, or most days anyway, and not very pleasantly, it was quite a relief in a way to just be flying to where you thought you would get some proper treatment, which actually was about the same as we'd been having anyway.
So I was going to ask you that. I mean, did the treatment change once you got to what amounts, I suppose, to a base hospital area in Calcutta?
Well, we didn't even really do that, because when we landed at Calcutta, they shepherded us, or took us, onto a train down at the main station and took us straight over to Pune. And there wasn't any stayover in any hospital in the Calcutta area or anywhere on the way. It just was out to Pune, the first hospital that we landed up in. There were, of course, the RAMC, people in the meantime to assist us and look after us, anything that needed doing, but not lying in proper beds and things like that.
So at Pune, were you in a proper hospital for the first time?
Yes, it was I just forget the name of it now, but it was a very big, long-established hospital there, which looked after, I suppose, all the people of Pune normally.
When did you actually start to fully recover from this infection? When you were at Pune, or...?
Yes, it was at Pune. But the main trouble was that it had become infected, and they had to clear that up. And it was a question of waiting until it just stopped suppurating, as they said. And then, of course, they found that I was getting a build up, a swelling behind the ear. And it was then that they decided they'd better ease off on the M&B and just let it recover a little more slowly. They used to wash it out every day, which was not particularly pleasant, and kept it clean and away from infection, I suppose. So I can't remember, I should think it was about 3 weeks before it was fit enough to go and do, well, to behave normally. I still couldn't hear properly there, and in fact I still now, how long, 56 years later, have the tinnitus, which happened then, which is with me all the time, every day. And it just acts as a bit of distraction in the background all the time. But they couldn't remove that anyway. One thing they did apparently forget to tell me was that I shouldn't get any water into it, because I love swimming and I got quite a lot of water in it in future years, but not nowadays, anyway. And other than that, yes, it was okay. And the other man who had come out with me from Schwebo on the same flight, no, he was on another flight after, he had also been sent to Pune Hospital, and we both left there together to move on to our next station, as you might say.
What was the daily routine when you were at Pune? Were you on any kind of duties?
No, we were just in the hospital and had to attend to normal hospital regulations. That was all, which was mainly, well, if you were lucky, you got an hour or two sleep in the daytime or something. It was mainly just behaving yourself, keeping the place clean, and eating when you were supposed to eat and going to bed when you were supposed to go to bed. Work details or anything like that.
Doesn't sound as if there's an awful lot to do.
There wasn't. You could go out in Pune. There possibly still are, well, there certainly were then, a lot of Parsis. And the local Parsi ladies, I suppose Women's Institute or something like that, used to ask us out occasionally to go and have tea with them or something like that. There wasn't anything else. I mean, you couldn't go out on the booze or anything. No, evenings out or anything. It was a very quiet life.
Did you ever go on one of these tea soirees?
Oh, yes, yes. I had two or three of those. And very pleasant.
What was it like? I mean, what were the arrangements?
Well, I suppose they were really like what a country women's institute outing would be like here. You know, please, they'd come into the ward and say, could they have so many people who could make their way to come and have afternoon tea or morning coffee or whatever it was. And so we'd go along as a collection of well-behaved bods and sit down and have tea and chat with these ladies.
Was this a tea on the croquet lawn? Or
yes, or in the drawing room or whatever. Yes, yes, it was very pleasant. They were sort of following up, as you might say, the English Memsahib's customs and treating people in the way that they thought that they would look after them. Because there weren't so many English there. There were Hindus and all the rest of them, but the Parsis were particularly helpful and very pleasant to get on with.
And it was mostly the ladies, was it?
Yes, because the men would be out working sometime somewhere, getting the money to keep them in their tea and cakes.
Well, sounds very civilised.
Yes.
What prompted the move from this rather quiet but somewhat idyllic sounding thing to back to Calcutta and the racecourse, where it sounds very uncomfortable?
Well, I suppose they wanted beds. They were probably getting short of beds then, scattered around India, and this hospital was, I suppose they needed to clear it and get people back on the route going back to their units, wherever they were, if they could, or moved off to some other units. And so they cleared us out to go to Dilali, which was really a sort of clearance area to get people sorted out into the right directions and so on. And still quite restful at Dilali. I mean, there wasn't anything strenuous to do there. And in fact, we were in wooden huts, and we even had boys to come and do the sweeping, cleaning, do our washing and all the rest of it. I mean, it was an idyllic life, really. And as I say, we even got paid, too, for the first time in months. So it was quite enjoyable.
Can you remember anything about Deol Alley itself? What did it, I mean, what was it like? And
just, well, I suppose originally it was an Indian town or village, but in later times it became a military centre. Why it had got the name of being full of crazy blokes or something, because it used to say you got Dilali tap, which meant your brain had gone a bit. I can't imagine, but we never saw any sign of any nuts around the place. They may have been in some other part of the town, I don't know, but not in the camp area where we were. And it was just a sort of central India place, not up in the hills, fairly level kind of area, and reasonably pleasant, as far as you could say about Middle India, which was not the choicest place to be, but wasn't bad.
It wasn't the choicest place to be. Why was that? Was this the climate?
Well, I mean, the climate in a way, and at that time the monsoon was approaching, but it hadn't yet hit the part, so it was terribly steamy and humid and sort of flattening. You didn't want to do anything anyway.